You're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Rebeller Sports.
4 seconds left.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to RBLR Lightning. As always, my name is Jake Ricker. Alongside me, it's Joe Zamataro and Michael Wax joining us today. Guys, welcome to the show. 88 days until hockey is back. The countdown is officially on. But first and foremost, guys, how you doing today?
Doing pretty well. Happy Monday, everybody. I love when we start getting into numbers where we can use players' names. We are Vasilevsky days away from the season starting.
It's another Bolt Report takeover, Jake. I'm happy to be here subbing in for Matt, as usual. But happy to talk some hockey. We have a little bit of news, but I think a lot of this is going to be discussion-based.
Yeah, so obviously the big news that we've had, and we'll jump right into it, J.J. Moser is officially signed with the Lightning. We talked about on last week's episode, which if you missed that, by the way, don't forget to like and subscribe if you've been returning so you don't miss out on future episodes, and you can go back and check out those other ones. But we talked about how he was going to arbitration. The Lightning have once again avoided that and signed him to a new contract. The deal is $3.375 million of an AAV. The total is, I believe, is a little over $6 million. But 3.375 is what is going to be his cap hit per year for 2 years. So JJ is signed, which is good. They avoided arbitration, which is also good. For me, guys, I love getting JJ. I think he's got some good potential. He was playing on some not as good teams. I think he can flourish here in Tampa. I think the contract's a little high. I would have liked it a little bit if it was a little bit lower, but obviously as you get closer and closer to arbitration, we also haven't seen JJ play in the Lightning system. It's really hard to judge a guy like that, but for me, the contract is just a tad high, but still a pretty decent value overall.
He's a guy that, we needed to put someone in, and, with this contract, for what I'm seeing, projected cap space of $730,000 is what's left. I know, when we were talking before the show, I thought we maybe mentioned it being a little bit higher, but I've only seen it being $730,000. It's not enough to actually sign anybody else to get in on the team. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens throughout the season. If there are any deficiencies with the team, it's pretty much guaranteed that a piece will have to be moved out before someone else can be moved in.
So when we talked before the show, I'm pretty sure I said 1.6. Is there anybody different on that roster that I just sort of missed?
It basically, depending on where you look, obviously all of us without Cap Friendly are kind of scrambling right now, but there are a couple of different places, Puck Pita, Cap Wages, depending on where you look, have some different people on the roster. Obviously, the Lightning have not announced their official roster, as we're going to get set to go through training camp, preseason, all that fun stuff, where we will get more of an official look at what the roster will be. So depending on where you look, the Lightning have around 1.6 or about 700,000. It just kind of depends on where you look right now and what that roster looks like.
I like Moser. I think he could be a solid third pairing guy. It will depend on who he pairs with, because one thing that I think the Lightning sort of struggled with last year was finding those consistent pairings. They did towards the end of the year. A lot of people seem to like Emil Liljeberg and either Nick Pervix or Max Crozier together. They seem to work very well together, and I'm pretty sure they even played playoff games together. They did what was required for the Lightning to win games. So can JJ Moser bring that to the Lightning? Yeah, he can, and if he's putting up 25, 30 points in a third pairing role, I think the Lightning will more than take that.
It'd be a lot of points, with the third pairing role. I'm much more concerned with, how he's doing defensively, plus minus. But It wouldn't surprise me also, you know, we talked about in the past to see like Perbix bounce back, having kind of a weird sophomore slump. You know, it happens quite often actually, and it's the reason why they have a term for it. But he also is a player that I think that can step up and play a lot better than he did. So having all this depth is, you know, pretty nice with the ability to make trades later on.
Mm-hmm. So if you guys didn't see, Daniel put a comment down there for us. JBB spoke highly of Moser. Team may be thinking that he'll be in the top four. He did speak very highly of Moser. Granted, he also, I thought he said Sirkic was going to be a part of our core. Then he got moved, so you never know what's going to happen. But I say that jokingly. He did speak very highly of him. And I do think he's got good potential. You know, this kind of contract can be a little bit of a really good signing, or one that you look back on, it's like, and that one didn't really work. It's only 2 years though, so there's not a little risk there. But you know, it's really going to be, how does he fit in with the team? Where does he end up playing? I'm sure Cooper's going to throw him around in a couple different places so they find that spot that he works best. So you know, unfortunately, we kind of are in that wait and see moment right now. By the way, welcome to everybody who's watching with us live. Don't forget, you can drop your comments down below. Join the conversation. We'd love to hear what you guys have to say. If you have any questions, let us know. We'll be sure to talk about that. Have some fun in this episode. And you can follow us at RBR Sports, at RBR Lightning, so you don't miss out when we do go live in the future.
So also, it should be noted that he is 24 years old. He's somebody that is still going to be getting better at the sport, you know, pretty much until you're, I don't know, I'd say around for a defenseman, like late 20s is where you peak. He's got a you know, quite a number of years where he's going to continue to get better, which is an exciting prospect as well. Even though, you know, he just, I don't know if I consider it like a bridge contract to something bigger. He's got to prove himself, but, you know, his first contract out of an entry level at, you know, if he's playing top 4 minutes, then, you know, that definitely could be a very beneficial contract for the Bolts.
Yeah, and even after the contract ends, he's still going to be an RFA. So this is going to be something where the Lightning could have him for, you know, 2 years, could have him for even longer than that. I know, I was thinking to myself, when was the last time, besides Tanner Janot, that we signed somebody to a 2-year contract? It doesn't happen often in Lightning history. So I don't know if this is a new, you know, way of thinking for Julian Brisebois, because he's got the core locked down. Let's get somebody for 2 years and another guy for 2 years. And if it doesn't work out, we can trade them like they did with Janot. But, you know,
that's what we gave Sherry, and that's the same thing that Corey Perry got, right? So those are kind of guys that slot into a role where you can see how they're going to work out.
Well, Sherry signed for 3 years. And
okay,
Perry, I think, was for Perry.
He was like 99% sure he was a 2-year contract. And but unless you're a core guy, though, a core guy, I mean, it it makes sense to, you know, not marry the person when, especially a contract like this where you don't really know how they're gonna perform long term.
Yeah, I like the 2 years that they have on him, because it is kind of like a bridge contract. See what he does, a prove it deal, if you will. See what can happen, you know. So we'll see. I'm very curious to see where Cooper puts him in the lineup, where he starts playing in preseason, in training camp, and all that. The Lightning will have to make those decisions as we move forward. Daniel says, by the way, JP got a 2-year contract as well. So there you go. There's a couple. I don't think it's something that happens too often, especially because considering a lot of the contracts Lightning have signed recently have been core guys, because they've been locking up that core for the most part. So you don't see it too often, but Jim kind of mentioned it there right now that we have that core for the most part locked up. Now they're moving to that 2-year contract situation.
I was just kind of looking at –
Yeah.
So I was just kind of looking at some of Moser's stats. He's listed as being 6'1", but only 175 pounds. He's a pretty skinny guy that, you know, to be on the defensive end of things. You know, I don't know if that's something that, you know, at 24, I don't think he's really going to bulk up much more, but that kind of surprised me, being only 175 at 6'1".
Hey, maybe pair him in the top four with Hedman or McDonough, and I don't think anybody's going to mess with him. Like, but then you've got to face those guys. So,
yeah, well, I mean, hopefully that gives them foot speed. I'm not real familiar with him. You know, I don't watch every game that's happening on the West Coast or really many games at all. So getting familiar with him, you know, come training camp, but hopefully he's got some foot speed to go with that lightweight.
I'm going to need to watch some highlights for sure because I haven't seen any of his gains before. Let me ask you guys this, since we're on the topic of defense. How do you guys see the top six defensemen shaking out? Because yeah, I got a couple of guys that could be up there. And again, we kind of mentioned that the lines can get jumbled around up there a little bit. Lilleberg also is another guy that could be a consistent guy that's playing in the top six. So you have that extra spot. The Lightning do tend to go with seven D-man sometimes as well. So there's a lot of possibilities there. I think JJ is going to be a part of the lineup. To me, it's either going to be Perbix or Radish that gets swapped out with Lilleberg on occasion. I think those guys kind of mix in a little bit. And depending on what the game is, you know, what how people are playing, where you kind of ride that hot hand a little bit. That would be my guess. What do you guys think, though, about that top six?
Joe, you want to go for it?
No. Let's hear your opinion. I've been pretty vocal. You haven't been on for a while, so why don't you take it?
I think the defense is better. Like, names-wise, I think it's better. I think McDonough is a better defenseman than Sergachev. Just defense-wise, you're not going to get the same amount of points, but he's a better defenseman. I don't know about name, like, pairs at this point. You know, we're going to have to wait for preseason to see that. I will say that, like, Lilleberg and Crozier, I kind of wish that they were a part of the main roster next year. And the way that the offseason has shook out, only one of them will be, where I think both of them should be. But other than that, I think we're really just going to have to wait until September.
Daniel, by the way, says he's got Hedman, Mosier, McDonough, Chernak, Radish, and Lilleberg, and Perbix is seven, unless he has a great offseason. I think that's pretty fair. That wouldn't surprise me too much. Although I don't think we should throw the towel in on Perbix completely. I know he had a kind of a tough year last year, but he's definitely a guy that could bounce back. We've talked about him a couple times on this podcast in that so-called sophomore slump.
Yeah, you could almost plug in Radish, Lilleberg, and Perbix into – any of those spots if they're playing well at the time. You know, we've talked about Radish and his offensive ability. He has had moments of brilliance. I feel like his defensive play has also gotten better on the whole. You know, it's hard to look at last season when it comes to a system, if that makes sense. You know, a lot of the guys got burned by backdoor plays, but I think that you got to kind of ignore those sort of deficiencies because it was built into the system, so you didn't get a real good look of the maturation of their play throughout the year. So it's like a really weird one, right, to be able to evaluate this talent. Gonna have to go into the first few games of the season to really see what shakes out. But one of the nice things too, we have defensive depth that we can put some players in the A, and it seems like inevitably, you know, especially with 81 on the roster, we're going to have an injury throughout the season, at least once, twice, or, you know, a dozen times with Chernak being on the roster. So it's guaranteed to be a spot to open up for somebody to come in.
Yeah, that's a good point about injuries, that those are going to happen during the season. It really does happen a lot. Maybe we'll finally wrap Chernak in bubble wrap this year so he doesn't get hurt nearly as much. Poor guy, always something going wrong with him.
You know, less minutes, put him on the, you know, third pairing, or let him be defenseman number seven, and maybe won't be hurt quite as much.
Yeah, you could do that.
I know we're talking about pairings. What about, like, Mosier and Chernak? I think that could work.
Got to see him first, though.
You got an offensive defenseman in Mosier that can put up 30 points. You got Chernak who plays defense sometimes.
It's definitely listen, offensive defenseman on paper, I think, is a good combination. Like Joe said, we do have to see him play because I don't know and you know, chemistry is a big thing. Unfortunately, you don't know how those things are going to work out until you see them on the ice together. But I don't hate that idea with Chernak and Moser. I think that's definitely a possibility. If he's going to be in the top four, though, I would imagine he plays with like Hedman, maybe. Although Radish has kind of been the guy that plays with Hedman, so he could play with McDonough. Actually, I could see Moser and McDonough. That would be a fun combination. But
I saw a sly smile from Joe when you mentioned Hedman Chernak. I will be the one to say I do not want to see that pairing ever again. If you're going to have Chernak in the top four, playing with Ryan McDonough.
But no, that's why I was saying Moser. Moser and Hedman, not Chernak. Yeah. So I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. There's unfortunately we're in that the middle of the off season right now where it's hard to get exactly bogged down in the details because we have to wait and see how these things play out. But training camp is coming soon.
And I know I need to stay off of social media. I think especially Facebook and like the Lightning Facebook groups, because every time I go in and see posts, like I don't know if I'm more disappointed in the fans or I'm frustrated because I feel like they need to have better content that they are digesting to have better opinions on things. But anyone that thinks that losing Sergachev was going to kill the franchise, which God, there's a lot of people talking about what a horrible move and mistake that's going to be. Look at what we have for the defense right now and how much salary cap we're able to free up. And a lot of stuff just that JBB has done just kind of makes sense from a team standpoint. And we have, leadership for days, on the defensive side of the puck. It just, I don't know. More people should watch RBLR Lightning, I think.
Head on over to the Bolt Report YouTube channel as well. I need to do that selfish plug.
Facebook is there are some great people all over there and some great Lightning fans, but it's not my favorite place to go. It can get a little dicey over there sometimes. But it's content and it can be very, very entertaining sometimes. That's for sure. Daniel says, by the way, Lightning Facebook groups might be the least educated fans out there. They're not all bad, but I have specifically avoided it recently, especially with all the news that's coming on. Listen, losing Sergachev is a bummer. I really like the kid. I think he's got a lot of potential. His contract was – I remember when he signed that contract. We talked about it here on RBLR that, it's nice to have him locked up long term, but it was one of those contracts where – okay, if he plays up to where they're expecting him to be, it's a good contract. But if he even misses that by a little bit, it looks a lot worse than what it currently was going to be. So there was definitely some risk in that contract. It could still work out depending on if he continues to improve and get back on that level that he was before he dealt with some injuries there last season. But it's definitely a riskier contract, and they don't have to deal with that. And Joe, I think the point about the leadership on that defensive side, there is a ton. You're absolutely right. Hedman and McDonough are two of the biggest leaders on this Lightning team currently, period. So there's definitely not a shortage of leadership.
I'm saying, even looking at Chernak, he's been there and done that. Maybe he's not setting the example all the time, but he's definitely played some heavy games. And then for that matter, Radish is an older guy. He's in every interview I've seen and segment on him. When he talks, he doesn't seem like someone like Cirelli. When Cirelli talks, you can feel the youthful exuberance, and it seems like he's a little bit more Radish is a little bit more controlled when comes to things, which helps a lot, especially on defense, because you need to be a little bit more controlled and disciplined.
Well, with a guy like Radish, too, and this is not to degrade anybody else on the roster, he didn't really get a spot until last year. Like, he worked his way to being a regular at 27, 28. Like, he's got those hard miles on him. So, like, you don't have to look at NHL games as experience or being a leader. Like, he has certainly put in the work to become an NHL regular, and that holds some sort of value. But the guys that maybe this year they'll get a cup of coffee in the NHL or they'll play a little bit and then they'll get sent down, they should look at him as the example, or like reach out to him as the example of like why, like, just because you get sent down once doesn't mean your career is over.
If only ABB would have talked to him at some point.
Montreal Canadian Alex Barrett-Goulet.
He is officially done. Well, I shouldn't say officially done with the Bolts. He was with the Seattle Kraken. unlikely the ABB experiment comes back once again here. Here's one thing I do know, though, is that JJ got his money and he's coming as a new Bolt. We're very excited to see him. And hey, JJ, if you need some new merch to pick up for the Tampa Bay area because you're joining us, I know the place to go. It's shop.rblrsports.com. You can check out our awesome team inspired merch, Lightning, Bucks, Rays, Rowdies, you name it. We got it. Links, as always, are in the description, and you can go check that out. Again, it's shop.rblrsports.com. And for our amazing viewers here, you can use code BOLTS to get 10% off your order. So be sure to go check that out. Even though it is the middle of the offseason, always time to gear up for the next upcoming Lightning season. All right, now the big thing that we got to talk about. Guys, I don't know about you. I wasn't ready for this. I was maybe slowly moving through my five stages of grief, finally moving along a little bit, and then Stamkos goes and releases his farewell letter to Lightning fans. And I have been completely reset, thrown through a loop, and just did absolutely, utterly, mentally destroyed. Stamkos put out his message to Lightning fans. It's a long read, but a good read. I think it's very well worth your time if you have not seen it already. There's a lot to kind of jump into and break it down, but I'll start by saying this. It was tough for me to read, you know, because Stamkos, you know, just talking about how much he loved being here in Tampa, how much of Tampa is a home to him, and all the great memories that he had. It was just surreal, really, to read that he is really gone and not going to be in a Lightning uniform next year. Joe, Michael, did you guys get a chance to read this letter yet?
Yep. It was a tough read. As someone who is as a curmudgeon as me sometimes, that was a tough read. But he really did just do a deep dive on his entire career with Tampa, which is a long time. And there's some tough parts in there for sure.
I mean, yeah, I thought it was great. Now, obviously, I'm on the belief that what JBB did was what was best for the team. I've been very vocal about the fact that I don't think that Stamkos should have been signed for more than a certain dollar value, and he got well more than double that going to Nashville. That being said, it doesn't mean that I was ever anti-Stamkos. And this post was kind of like a mini autobiography. It's really cool to read, going through some of the moments, especially because I remember so clearly, specifically driving down the crosstown, seeing the Seen Stamkos signs, the billboards, and it didn't even have a Lightning logo on them, if I remember correctly. It just said that, you know, Seen Stamkos, with kind of a silly looking text font that they were using. Don't feel like anybody had any clue what any of that meant. And that was before, that was like a month before the draft. We had the guaranteed first overall, and that marketing team decided to generate buzz because no one knew what the heck a Stamkos was. You know, venturing from that all the way, you know, talking about his injuries and cup runs and the leadership that he was kind of thrust into, you know, having Vinny and Marty on the team. It was a really neat read. You know, take a few minutes if you have the chance to go through it. And the ending, I thought, was, you know, it's heavy, but then, you know, the last sentence gives you like that hopeful feeling, which I thought was an awesome way to finish it up, if you guys want to talk about that.
Well, I'm curious what you mean by hopeful feeling on the last line.
The last line was, "And when the time comes to play down in Tampa, it'll be nice to be home again." I mean, why not give him, you know, he's not going to finish out, well, maybe he'll finish out this contract, but, you know, there's an opportunity for him to retire a Bolt after this contract is either up or bought out. And it's a nice nod to the fact that he's not, he's not saying that there's not a chance for him to come back to Tampa in some capacity, at least.
Oh, so you read into it as a chance for him to come back and play for the Lightning.
It says, and when time comes to play in Tampa, so that's what I was originally thinking, even if that means like a small contract for a single season or like one of those honorary one-day contracts. Either way, I think that's probably not the last time we'll see Stamkos on the ice wearing Bolts blue. The question will, you know, more or less be how.
So the way that I took it was, this is, again, I know I had a conspiracy on the last episode, but this one's a little bit more lighthearted. I think him and Hedman are going to retire together. I think they're going to do it in Tampa. I think because Hedman is always a year ahead of Stamkos on the contract. Stamkos' contract runs out, comes back for one more year. They play out the year and they retire together. So that's 4 years from now, and things can change. But they seem that, they really built the market here. They built the fan base here, because he talks about how nice the fan base, or how big the fan base is, how much it means to him. I don't think he realizes, like, he helped build that. It was him and Hedman. Because before then, the Lightning, they won a cup, but, they didn't turn into the hockey market that they were until Stamkos and Hedman came along, and they became a modern day like dynasty, basically. So I do think that with the way that they've been able to play together and grow up together, I think they will retire together as well.
Interesting. I took it as just when he's back in Tampa playing, the Nashville first game in Tampa, that'll be nice to be home. I didn't read into it like that at all, but I mean, hey, I would love for Stamkos to retire as a Bull. I am not going to be against that whatsoever. That would be so exciting for me, but interesting that you guys took it that way. Because for me, it was just next game, that next time he's back in Tampa, still playing with Nashville. And Daniel apparently read it the same too. He said he'll be the next McDonough back with the Lightning after a couple of years. I mean, hey, yeah, I would love that. But I'm curious to know now how many people actually read it, because I feel like I might be in the minority on this one, like I was with the whole Stamkos situation. But I didn't get that at all. But it was a great. One of the things that I really loved about it too was him talking about the bubble situation and that whole moment, because I think that might have been one of the greatest moments in his career, especially with the Lightning, and considering that, everything that he was going through during that time during the bubble and the injury, and then him talking about how he scored that massive goal, and it was just kind of the adrenaline took over after he scored, but he knew right after that he was going to be done for the rest of the series. That was such a big moment in Tampa Bay sports history. I love that he mentioned that in the article as well. That was really cool and really interesting to see, how much he was going through on that side of things and to come out on top like he did.
There's a lot of stuff that he's gone through in his career. I mean, there's been so much from, like you said, those injuries. I don't know if you guys can really appreciate how lucky we are that we actually even kept Stamkos when the OK Cowboys were running the show, the Oren Cools group. They were treating the team like it was a fantasy team, like a fantasy roster. There's major players in and out, it seemed like every week, where they're making big trades. They wanted Stamkos to be a highlight, but he honestly wasn't ready for it. He had to do a conditioning stint to get a little bit stronger, faster, and be ready for the game. And they butt heads with Barry Melrose on that. If there's anything that Barry Melrose, I think, was right on, it was sending Stamkos down, which I think Barry Melrose only lasted as a head coach 16 games for the Lightning. It was insane everything that was happening. I mean, they handed out ridiculous contracts, which ended up completely, like you get, like with Sergachev, you get too big of a contract, you have to basically earn all that money. And if it's too much money that you're making, you get bought out and you have to go somewhere else. And that's what happened for a number of players because of them. It very easily could have happened with Stamkos as well, where they give him up for other assets. But luckily, that wasn't the case. And even in those really, really rough years, we had the fun of watching Stamkos, Marty, Vinny, be able to put up points, even if put up goals, even if the team themselves weren't putting up points. But man, it would just take one phone call and one solid offer to get him shipped out of here.
Well, it's funny you say the one solid phone call. Wasn't it Vinny that they actually did try to trade, but there was that whole dispute, and then between the two of them, and Bettman had to step in, and I believe it was Vinny that they actually did try to trade, and there was a trade set for him to leave, but it ended up getting nixed because of the whole dispute between the two owners, and so that almost did happen, but just with Vinny, not with Stamkos.
No, I don't remember. I honestly don't remember that specifically, but I mean, it did result in him being bought out, and then Brad Richards. I can't remember if that was bought or if that was a trade. That was a trade. Weren't able to keep Boyle. There's a lot of stuff that went down with that group.
I think one of your guys' shows in the dead of the off season should be just seeing all of the moves that Joe was talking about. Because there's some ones in my head that, I don't want to drag this on, but, we haven't even touched on them yet. Like, they're just crazy things.
It was an interesting time for the Lightning, no question about it. We got a comment here from Instagram. It says, what do you guys think is the best and maybe not the best move the Lightning have made so far this offseason? Great question. There have been a lot of moves this offseason to kind of go on. Let me start with this from the not the best move. Obviously I was not a fan of the whole Stamkos situation. I still think it's going to hurt a little bit. I think the Lightning are missing a top six forward. I still think that's one of their biggest needs right now. Obviously things just didn't work out. Stamkos said this in his letter, he says he tried to do everything he could to make it work. Sometimes things just don't work. And that is what it is. But I definitely think they need a top six forward. So for my not best move, I'll say this. I think the not best move is that they haven't gone out and gotten somebody from the top six. It could definitely still happen. I know there's some rumors floating around there and possible trades that they could go try and make. But I still think they need an extra piece for that top six. As for my favorite move that they made, probably have to be bringing Ryan McDonagh back. I love that move. I'm very excited to have McDonagh back. I think he was a huge part of the Lightning's defensive success in past years. And especially, when you move on guys like Sergachev, nice to have McDonagh back, who's a really good defensive defenseman and a leader in that locker room. So McDonagh is probably my favorite move. What about you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly like almost all the moves that were made. Sergachev surprised the heck out of me, but I like the move. I really do. I can appreciate, what Vinnick JBB was forced to do in terms of Stamkos. So, it kind of is what it is. But there's a lot of little things that have been done in order to try to bring some more strength to this team and a little bit more parity. I feel like the one that I'll say that I don't like, I get it, but I'm not a fan. I really wanted to see Tanner Janot stay and Chernak be moved out. I think that getting rid of him when, I've been vocal about it too, I don't think he got a fair shake at all. He might go on to prove me right or wrong one way or another with his new team. Either he's going to put up a bunch of points and be a beast of a player, beating teams up on the scoreboard and with his fists, or maybe he is just a complete bust and flash in the pan. But I'd like for that decision to have been made in Tampa.
I would say best move is probably Gensel. I know that's the biggest move they made, but if you had told me 3 days before it happened, what?
How did I forget about Gensel? Yeah, it's a really good move that they made.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah. If you had told me 3 days before we got Gensel and signed him, that we were going to get Jake Guentzel, I would have been like, oh, okay. Like, you know, he's probably going to want $11 million and, you know, we'll overpay for him in free agency or, you know, that's, I didn't even think it was going to happen originally. And then to secure him with a trade and then, you know, secure him even more with a contract that is pretty reasonable because he's not making the max amount of money for the little cap that the Lightning have internally of $9.5 million. Like, I do think that he's going to unlock something in Braden Point. Him playing with Kucherov is going to unlock something in him. Whether, you know, whether that line sticks together all year will remain to be seen. I know sometimes they like to move that third person off of the first line. But if it does, it could be one of the best lines in hockey. As far as my least favorite move, like Joe said, I didn't really have one that I hated. But I will say that I kind of wish they had re-signed Tyler Mott. I think letting him walk was tough because of the role that he provided as a veteran, the role that he provided on the penalty kill. There were a couple of shifts every game where he would do something and you're like, that's Tyler Mott. Like, he should not be doing that, but you know, he was very impressive. And there were a couple of games where he was one of the Lightning's best players. So seeing him walk to a division rival is tough because he signed with, I think it was Detroit. And the Lightning are probably going to have to pay for that each of the times they play the Red Wings.
Yeah, Mott was a guy that I was hoping that they would bring back, more of a minor when it comes to the overall role of the team. But I'm with you there on that one, Michael. We have a comment here from Beverly saying, what about Sherry? Do you think we're going to keep him? It's a great question. And we kind of alluded to this a little bit. Joe, you mentioned it with the current cap space for the Lightning and that if they are going to make another move, someone else is going to have to go. Sherry's probably the best option to move out some other money to acquire somebody else. I don't know if another team would be willing to take that on or not. That's a discussion for JBB and the other GM. So I think if they made a move, I could see Sherry going. But I have a sneaky feeling that I think JBB thinks this team's good to go as is. And I see Sherry staying on the team this year. Unless JBB decides that they do need some extra help in the forward core. Other than that, I, again, have a kind of this feeling that the team that we currently have is a team we're going to run with at least for the start of the season until we get into the whole trade deadline talk and during those days. But, you know, Sherry's got two more years on his deal. It's, you know, I know not everybody's a big fan of his with the whole way things have played out. I hope he bounces back. But it's kind of a similar Tanner Janot situation, and maybe next year they move on from him.
And you have to remember, too, that Sherry was a guy that when he was on the ice, nothing happened, but it happened on both sides of the puck. There weren't goals really being scored against. There weren't goals being scored for. He just, I don't know, it was almost like dead air in the middle of a pod. Yeah, you know, he was eating up minutes, but the other team wasn't doing much either. There's still the possibility that with the right combination that you can see him play better than he has with moving into this, that weird system that they started the season with last year. There's again, a lot of, I would say it's like almost like an apprehension, when you have to figure out what spot you need to be in. It makes you a little bit slower and, makes it so that you can't, jump plays nearly as much when you're overthinking things. So maybe this next season, depending on how they're running, if they're running the exact same system, fine. But they'll be a little bit more comfortable with it. Maybe he has a bit of a rebound and bounces back because we weren't doing anything with the bottom six forwards, and that's where he was stuck for most of the season. And maybe he can treat this as a fresh opportunity, put up some points where he at least realizes the value of his contract, and I think that would be a pretty big win if he at least put up enough points to justify the money he's getting paid.
There's no way he's this bad 2 years in a row, right? Like, offensively, there's no chance. So that's one of the things where, like, if Jake, you ask if the roster's better, I'm like, well, Connor Sherry can't be as bad as he was last year. The offense has to come from somewhere. I actually looked up his stats. I thought he had 2 goals. He had 4. So congratulations for proving me wrong on that front. But he only had 15 points. Like,
but look at who he was playing with a lot. You know, he was playing with Mott quite a bit too, and they just, those guys weren't scoring. They didn't have the ability to put the puck in the back of the net. The only person that was offensive for us consistently was Kucherov, and he dragged the whole team with him. How he was an MVP is beyond me, because he's the only person that was consistently putting up points for this team, and the only reason why we made the playoffs to begin with. And, you know, Sherry didn't have a chance unless he was playing on that line, and he wasn't going to be playing on that line.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Sherry played on the second line to start the year, and he still didn't put up anything. So, like, there was a reason for them to drop him.
Yes, but he's not a game breaker. And also, who is on the second line at the time? Paul. Paul's not a game breaker. Who else was on that second line? Stamkos. Stamkos, as much as you guys love him, is no longer a game breaker. He's a guy that has to be in a spot to correct me if I'm wrong on this, but he's a guy that has to be in a spot and be fed a puck in order to score. He's not skating end to end and scoring. He may have done it once all season. And when you don't have anybody that has that ability, you're not going to be putting up much for points. And Stamkos definitely wasn't skating end to end, setting up a play. We used to make fun of what a horrible passer he was for the majority of his career. He's not a big playmaker.
Yeah, I liked when Sherry was with Stamkos, but yeah, the lines he played on definitely weren't the best to help him out. I mean, you know, you look at his old seasons when he was playing with Pittsburgh and in Washington, he was playing with Ovi, he was playing with Crosby. I think Malkin was on that line too when he was with Pittsburgh as well. So he was playing with some great playmakers, and he benefited from that. And it worked out well for him. I thought when he first came here that he would play on similar lines. And we kind of saw that when he played with Kucherov, right? Where now, granted, Kucherov could help literally anybody. He was that good, as Joe mentioned. But we kind of saw the potential there. My worry, though, is that I don't know if he'll actually play on a top 6 line. I think he'll be back in the bottom 6 like he was last year. Hopefully he does improve. I still think there's a chance. And Daniel says here, Sherry played one game with Cooch and put points that night. Yeah, when he played with Cooch, he was great. He's really good at I'm not sure what the exact word is here, but he's a really good guy to have out there with those playmakers, because he knows where to go, where you need to be in front of the net. And he benefited from, like with Kucherov, that one, I think the exact play it was, he was sitting in front of the net, Kucherov threw it on net, and tapped it home. You know, was it a great play, an amazing job by Sherry? No, Sherry did what he was supposed to do, though, got in front of the net and made the play necessary. So when he's playing with some great players, I think he's a guy that could definitely put up a lot of points. So maybe we do see him in the top 6 a little more, because we just talked about how we kind of need that top 6 guy. Maybe they throw him up there and try it this year, playing with Gensel or Kucherov or Point or whoever that may be. But that, I think that could work out for them, and I would love to see it. I don't know if it will happen. Again, that's for John Cooper and the rest of the coaching staff to eventually decide.
I mean, you just asked, you probably said we'll probably see him in the top 6 more often. I just wanted to make sure he did not play in the playoffs. So you see a top 12 forward on Lightning. That'll be interesting.
Well, yeah, he didn't play in the playoffs, but, you know, the playoffs are a different beast, and the Lightning are trying to win some games there. But, you know,
and he's small.
Season, I wouldn't be surprised if they tried it out once or twice.
Yeah, he's a smaller guy. They're going to go through camp and be able to try out a bunch of different things. When camp started, wasn't Braden Point injured already for camp last season, or did he get injured? He got injured at the beginning of the season, right?
I can't remember off the top of my head exactly what the injury was. And Beverly is right, by the way. You guys saw the comment that just popped up. In all fairness, he did have an injury from December on. He did. He did get hurt for a little while, which probably hindered him a little bit as well. So there's a big chance for Sherry to have a big comeback season. Will it happen? I don't know. Only time will tell. But, Michael, you did kind of hit on it too. Like, right, it's the bar is low, so it shouldn't be too hard to improve it. Hopefully he does, though.
Point missed a single game this year, so I'm not quite sure.
It was a single game? Okay, so I guess I'm
at the beginning of the year.
All right, so I'm completely misremembering on it then. But what I was going to say is, you know, to be able to play with some of those guys to start the season might be a nice thing, and at least in camp. I was thinking that he didn't get a chance to play camp with them. maybe there's an opportunity there.
Well, only time will tell, and we're getting closer and closer to training camp and all of that fun stuff. So very much looking forward to that. Of course, we're going to have all the coverage right here for you guys. And you know, I know it's the middle of the off season, but make sure you like and subscribe, hit that notification bell, and share this video with all your friends, because we'll be having a lot of fun in the future episodes. We'll be talking about some fun things when it comes to Lightning off season, some Lightning history maybe. And if you got any episode ideas that you want to hear us talk about, throw them down in the comments below. We'd love to hear what you guys have to say, and maybe we'll use it for a show idea in the future. But that's going to do it for us in this episode, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in as always. We'll talk to you next time. Go Bolts.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.